Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is the person who just accused me of being too energetic, senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Greetings, program! I just blew out everyone's ears.
Yeah, she did.
Sorry about that. So today we are going to talk about something. We've actually had requests about this for ages.
Mm-hmm.
We've had people ask us about Halo and the games of Halo. And
Wait. All my notes are about Beyonce. Is that a problem?
You can see your halo?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a problem. In more ways than one, but we'll talk about that after the show. So, yeah, we wanted to talk about the games of Halo and sort of the development, the story of Halo, if you will, because to talk about the technology that's within Halo is kind of silly in a way because the games are set in the 26th century, and as it turns out, the technology of the 26th century is different from the technology we have today, in order to explain how things would work, we'd have to make stuff up.
Well, we talked about the TARDIS.
Yes, and we had to make stuff up. So
not entirely.
We're going to talk about kind of the development of these games and where they came from and how they evolved over time. So let's cast our minds back to the mid-90s.
Actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back just a hair further.
Oh, all right. You go right on ahead.
Just a little. You, to 1991.
I will follow you wherever you may go.
There's a song in there somewhere.
There is no mountain too high.
A couple guys, Alexander Seropian and Jason Jones, basically got together. They had both been working on writing software. Alexander came up with the amazing game, which was a clone of Pong called GNOP.
Ah. So, what, did you play a ball that had to knock paddles back and forth?
Well, I don't know. I actually haven't seen stuff. But they got together. They wanted to do this for, well,
let me start by saying this. All of you out there who have a project, and I'm speaking to myself also in addition, who have a project and you want to do it not because you want to become the next billionaire, but mostly because you can, and you just tried to get motivated to see what happens if you can do it, but you just haven't gotten there yet. Listen, you know, to the story of Jason and Alexander, not Jason Alexander, that's different. Because they essentially started writing these programs because they wanted to see if they could do it. And, at least according to the information I dug up on the Bungie website, because what they essentially did was they started writing software and they wanted to see if they could sell it. And they were selling, you know, a couple thousand copies, 2,500 copies of their early games, like Minotaur. And then, you know, they basically made it through the early 90s and started Bungie, this software company that was making games primarily for the Macintosh, simply because that was the operating system they knew well, more than any other, really. And they started growing bigger and bigger, and they were one of many Macintosh game developers in the early to mid-90s. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they moved up, as Jonathan was getting ready to say before I interrupted him so harshly. You know, they with every game they released, they were gradually more successful. And but one of the things is that they wanted to create games that had something more to them than just straight gameplay. They wanted to have a story, a narrative mm-hmm. that went along with it.
Exactly. And in the mid-90s, Bungie, which was called Bungie Software Products Corporation at the time, began to work on a series of games called Marathon. It's called the Marathon Trilogy. There's Marathon, Marathon 2 Durandal, and Marathon Infinity, mm-hmm. which were released in 94, 95, and 96, respectively. And these games set up a science fiction futuristic world. They were first-person shooter games. They were for the Mac platform. So
yep.
They're for the Mac OS. And you took the role of a character who was aboard, at least in the first game, you were aboard a colony ship called Marathon.
Yep.
And there were certain themes that were created in this game that would later end up reemerging in the Halo series. So having a first-person shooter, having it be a science fiction setting, there were aliens in the games. And, of course, in the Halo series, there are aliens. We'll talk about them in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
It also created the idea, and this is not unique, of course, to games that Bungie's created, but it created the idea of an ancient civilization that's responsible for some incredibly sophisticated technology that has since been lost mm-hmm. to everybody else. Like, you occasionally come across a remnant of it and you think, wow, this must be really amazing and maybe this can still work in some capacity, but you have very little understanding of it. That was sort of established in these games. Also, another important element that ended up playing a big role in various parts of Halo is the idea of artificial intelligence. So you have these personalities, these AI personalities that are individuals. You know, they have a sense of identity and personality. And the idea of an AI going rampancy.
Mm-hmm.
Rampancy is in the Marathon universe and also somewhat in the Halo universe, this idea that an AI can become not only self-aware, but self-actualized. Like, it can start to behave on its own. And it starts to lose coherence and sanity over time so that it actually starts to break down and it can become a dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm.
This AI can become destructive and it can become resentful of its creators, of the whatever physical construct it inhabits. And these are ideas that also carry over into the Halo universe to some extent. We haven't seen a lot of it in the direct Halo games, but a lot of it has come out in the various novels and other tie-ins to the Halo universe, including one that I'll talk about briefly, the Red versus Blue series. You know, we had the creator of that series, Bernie Burns. We had him on our show not too long ago to talk about the development of Red versus Blue. Well, Red versus Blue also continues this idea of rampancy and AI. It becomes a very central part of the story in Red versus Blue. So they sort of took that same idea and adapted it for their story. Now, keep in mind the Red versus Blue universe and the Halo universe are kind of cousins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Red versus Blue universe does not directly tie into the story of Halo. It just kind of splits off, sort of like the evil goatee version of Spock. And the Marathon games took place in the 28th and 29th centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually, from the perspective of Halo, takes place in the future.
Right.
Anyway, the Marathon universe and the Halo universe are kind of spiritual cousins, but not directly related. So the things that happen in Halo are not necessarily things that will take place in the history of the Marathon universe. It's just meant to, like, some of the ideas that came up in Marathon also came up in Halo. So the Marathon games come out for the Mac in the 90s. And in 1999, one other element I meant to mention. All three of those games had very important story elements, what you were talking about, this idea of creating a
story. Mm-hmm.
They had very important story elements that would be told to the player through the use of terminals that had these AI personalities inhabiting them.
Mm-hmm.
And you would get missions through the terminals. You would also get more information about the world and the mythology that was being built around this whole game system, or a series of games, rather. And Bungie was very proud of that. And it was, again, a very central part of this game. And it kind of set it apart from other first-person shooters, which, when you get boiled down to it, a lot of first-person shooters essentially boil down to, you're a dude in a place with a lot of bad guys, you got a gun, try to get to the other side of the map. Like, that's the extent of the story for a lot of these games.
Yeah.
And Bungie wanted to make something a little more deep and complex. Well, in 1999, Bungie announced the successor to the Marathon series, in a way. Again, the spiritual successor. And this was the Halo game. In fact, originally it was thought of as just a standalone game. Halo, what would eventually become Halo Combat Evolved. And the first unveiling of this was, it wasn't really an official unveiling, but they held closed door sessions at E3 in 99,
mm-hmm.
where they would invite certain people to come back and see the game that was in development. And at this time, it was in development for the Mac.
Yeah, one of the things that that Bungie did, Marathon really established them as one of the leaders in Mac game development.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talking about that in the mid-90s is basically establishing yourself among a small handful of other developers, really, because gaming for the Mac at that time was just not that strong. Speaking as a Mac user of that time.
Yeah, there are entire videos online from that era that are devoted to, you know, the laments of the Mac gamer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're Bungie and Blizzard both were very devoted to the Mac, and Marathon was something of a point of pride in a way for a lot of my friends who, you know, there were gamers in the Windows side who were interested in playing and they couldn't because they had a PC. Well, they did port they began to port the Marathon series over to Windows 95. And, you know, Bungie became a more well-rounded developer. They started releasing things for Windows and Mac, but, you know, they had a series of others, like Myth, the Myth series 1 and mm-hmm. 2, which was, you know, sort of a strategy-type game. You weren't playing as it's a third-person game.
Yeah.
And then Oni, which was sort of a third person shooter.
Mm-hmm.
I am actually wearing my Oni t-shirt, which I got in Macworld. And when they announced Halo at Macworld in 1999,
yeah,
which
the
was
Macworld Expo,
which was earlier in the year than E3, which I think is kind of important to point out for the timeline of this. The fans were excited. Because yeah. here it was, this, you know, it was planned for the Mac. They were really excited about playing this brand new game. If you were around back when they released Halo, or, you know, were starting to promote Halo, they were going to release it for multiple platforms.
Right.
Windows, PC, and Mac, and at least one console, if I remember correctly. And the thing is, you know, this it started generating buzz at Macworld. It picked up at E3.
Well, heck, I mean, Steve Jobs himself came out during the keynote for Macworld, and he talked about this game. And again, this was a way to show how the Mac could be a great platform for games, and so he was pointing this out as an example. And, yeah, I got a great reaction when people saw what the demo for this game, which, you know, in compared to what eventually came out, was fairly primitive, although it still looked great. Well, then in 2000, everything changes because Microsoft acquired Bungie in that year. And the development of Halo switches from primarily being a Mac game to being an Xbox title, one of the launch titles for the Xbox system. And I read that the Bungie executives at the time were really, you know, considering this carefully when Microsoft came to them with this acquisition deal, because they had a couple different pathways open to them. Remaining independent would have been probably the I think everyone would have preferred that the most, except for the fact that it's uncertain when you're an independent company and you don't have that benefit of a larger parent company to help get you through tough times.
Yeah.
You know, you stand or fall based upon how your products do. And the success of one product does not necessarily guarantee the success of the next product. However, they were also worried about selling to a company that would just want to turn them into a production company that all it did was port games from other platforms to the Mac. And
right.
That would be all they would do. They didn't want that to happen. But then when Microsoft came to them, they saw Microsoft as a company that was getting very, very interested and very serious about games. And they felt that that was a good match for their work culture. And so they did make that deal with Microsoft. And so that's when Halo switched from being primarily a Mac OS game to an Xbox game, although it also came out for PC. And it was on November 15th, 2001, when Halo Combat Evolved released for the Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I was an Xbox owner, early Xbox owner, and Halo was one of the games that I played throughout the entire time that I had that Xbox. I mean, I was a hardcore Halo fan, and I loved playing the campaign, even the infamous library level, which I will talk about in a second. And I also loved hooking up the Xbox to other Xboxes and playing in LAN parties against other players, which was a preview of what was to come once Xbox Live launched and people were able to play online against each other and call each other names that I didn't even know could exist until I got online and heard a 12-year-old call them out to me.
Yeah, there are this really threw the gaming world into a bit of a tizzy.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Bungie had made some deals. They had a partnership with Take-Two. You know them from the Grand Theft Auto series. This was right about the time Oni was supposed to have been released. Take-Two ended up with the rights to Oni and published it. Bungie did shift primarily to developing for the Xbox, although the Windows and later the Mac got their copies eventually.
Yeah.
This was a bit of a major shift. The PlayStation 2, by the way, never did see its version of Halo. I wonder why.
You can't imagine why.
This was kind of a big deal. I understand too that Activision was courting Bungie as well.
Yeah.
But Microsoft ended up on top. And then it was released with some minor, praise.
Yeah. So if you are one of the few people out there who has no idea what the storyline of Halo is all about, I'll kind of boil it down for you. And keep in mind, this story has been fleshed out quite a bit with supplemental material in the form of novels, comic books, and other media as well.
Yeah.
But if you were to just take the content that's in the games themselves and string it together chronologically based upon the release of the games, This is how the story unfolds.
Okay.
So the game opens up, Halo Combat Evolved opens up with this massive spaceship coming out of what is called slipstream space. And it's essentially like warp drive. You're warping space around so that you can travel faster than light. It is in an era where faster than light travel is not only something we can do, but something that's fairly common in human space travels at this point. And the overpopulation problems of Earth have gotten to the point where the colonization of other planets was a necessity. And one of the planets that humans colonized was called Reach. And on Reach, you had this massive human colony, which covers most of the planet. But 25 years before the opening of the game, the humans came into contact with a confederation of alien races called the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
The Covenant have this very hierarchical, religious view of the galaxy, and they think of humans as being evil, and they need to be wiped out. They're unclean creatures that have to be destroyed. And so there's this massive battle that took place on Reach before the events of Halo open. And the ship that your character is on, the Pillar of Autumn, has just escaped Reach into slipstream space. It comes out of slipstream space, and no one's really sure where they are because they just had to make a getaway as fast as possible, and they couldn't really plan it out. So your character is known as John. John 117, you're never really given a full identity for your character. And he's mostly known by his designation of Master Chief. He's Master Chief Petty Officer. And he is a Spartan, which is a super soldier, a cybernetic, biologically engineered soldier who is stronger, faster, more capable than your typical soldier is. Also has the ability to store an artificially intelligent personality within his armor. So he can carry around with him an AI that can further augment his abilities.
Mm-hmm.
He's in cryogenic sleep at the beginning and is woken up when
I'm awake.
The ship comes out of slipstream space, and it is right in front of this enormous ring-shaped space station. And the space station is huge. It's 10,000 kilometers in diameter. And it's so large that there are ecosystems that have developed upon the surface, both surfaces, the inner and outer ring, of this space station. And most of the stuff in the space station, of course, is on the interior of the ring, inside the ring's guts. But there's all this other stuff that's on the outside. And meanwhile, the Covenant guys are right hot on the tail of the Pillar of Autumn. So Master Chief's purpose in the first game is really to protect the artificial intelligent construct called Cortana, and to protect the location of the Earth so that the Covenant don't figure out where the Earth is, and also to figure out what the heck this ring thing is, because no one seems to know. And the Covenant, they don't know, but it's something in their legends that they think that this is a tool they're supposed to use in order to reach their religious enlightenment, to go on the great journey. And it turns out that the ring is something that was built by this ancient race of aliens that were very, very advanced, called the Forerunners. So again, that's pulling that same sort of idea that they developed in Marathon and employing it in Halo. And as the game progresses, I mean, there's going to be lots of spoilers in this, but if you haven't played the first Halo game, then I don't know why you're listening to this episode. On that ring, they discover that there is a race of parasitic aliens called the Flood, which can infect other races, sentient races, and take them over.
Mm-hmm.
And you discover throughout the story that the Halo devices themselves are actually a weapon, a defense system designed by the Forerunners to wipe out the Flood. The way they do this is they flood the entire galaxy in energy that kills any sentient creature. So in other words, you kill off the Flood by killing off the food supply. Here's the problem, is that humans are technically a sentient creature, so if they were to actually turn on this device, they would wipe themselves out. So then, on top of everything else, Master Chief needs to try and destroy this Halo device to make sure that the Covenant doesn't turn it on and kill everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And as you play the game, you end up being able to do that. You do have this one level called the Library, which is filled mostly with the Flood, but also some Covenant, which goes on forever and has essentially the same hallway like five times. It's crazy, especially if you're playing on the harder difficulties. So it was one of those levels that gamers often would sort of complain about, because they felt that, one, it was really repetitive,
mm-hmm.
and two, it was really, really difficult, and three, it was incredibly long. So it had all those things going for it. And the armor you wear. I love the name of the armor you wear. Mjolnir Mark V. Mjolnir, or Mew Mew, is, of course, the name of Thor's mighty hammer.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of things like that in the game, where different ships and equipment have these cool names to it. And in the game, you have the human-based weapons, which are all sort of things like, you know, battle rifles. So they're kind of like machine guns, things like that, pistols, sniper rifles. Then you have the Covenant weapons, which are all these sort of energy-based weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And the two have very different abilities, and they're useful in different situations. And that kind of set the basic premise of the Halo series. And again, there was a lot more story going on than you would necessarily first notice if you were just playing the game through as a first-person shooter and you weren't really paying attention to that. And that story ended up getting fleshed out quite a bit by the other materials.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the basis for the first game. And the end of the first game, assuming you succeed, you destroy the Halo structure, and then you are the only, really the only person to escape. Well, one of two, depending upon how you look at it, and you make your way back to Earth to figure out what the heck's going on. So that game ended up being really, really, really popular. It was not meant to be the first of a series of games. It was kind of a self-contained story.
However, with a game like this, with it being such a hit and it being owned by Microsoft, which had such high expectations for the Xbox and this title, how could you not have Halo 2?
Yeah. And fortunately, I would say the sequels of Halo, a game that did not was not made to be the first in a series, they were much more successful at continuing that story than, say, a movie like Highlander 2. Which, again, if you watch the first Highlander, you realize this is a movie that was not meant to be the first in a series. It has a very definitive end. But Halo managed to succeed in areas where Highlander did not.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
So on November 9th, 2004, Halo 2 comes out and is incredibly popular. It's already, I mean, people are eager to continue the story, and you have the added bonus of online multiplayer games.
Yeah. The Halo 2 first debuted, well, at any point where people could see it at E3 2003.
Yeah.
At the Halo 2 Theater.
Yep.
And if you've ever seen pictures of any of these expos, you know that the companies that are behind them spend a lot of money on the stuff they really want to promote.
Yeah.
And it could include anything from lots of banners and lights and all sorts of funky electronic stuff to
statues,
giant statues,
robots.
Yeah. It can be amazing. But yes, they Microsoft built a theater so that people could actually see Halo 2 in action.
You walk into this big conference room floor, and it's not even recognizable as a conference room floor in some parts because you've got these massive structures in place, including theaters, which show off various games. And, yeah, you can actually find videos on YouTube of the different Halo preview events where people get that look and the reaction you hear from the crowd. Like, these are hardcore fans of these games. Now, E3 is supposed to be an industry-only event, although in certain years they did open to the public. But even as an industry-only event, you hear people really react in a very vocal way when they see these Halo games previewed. Well, when it came out in 2004, it was very popular. It did make some interesting – there were some interesting choices in the game. It picks up where the first game left off, but the Covenant end up discovering the location of Earth, and there's a big battle that takes place on Earth to try and fight off the Covenant and to cut them off before they can tell the rest of the Covenant where Earth is, because this is just one little branch of the Covenant Armada. They're actually looking for something, and they happen to find Earth because they're looking for something else that turns out to be on Earth. Spoiler alert for the end of this story. Master Chief ends up having to fight them off. Then he has to pursue a fleeing Covenant ship before it can find the rest of the Covenant Armada and let them know where Earth is. And in the process, they discover a second Halo ring. So this is where you find out that there are several Halo rings throughout the galaxy that are set up in this defense network. And the first one was just one of many.
Mm-hmm.
Aboard that second Halo ring, they discover a creature called the Gravemind, which is the leader of the Flood on that particular installation, Installation 5. And it turns out it's very intelligent, and it's very manipulative. It ends up manipulating Master Chief and an elite. Now, the elites are one of the races of aliens that belong to the Covenant. And one of the elites is called the Arbiter, which was a disgraced elite. It was disgraced because it's the one that takes the blame for the first Halo blowing up in the first game. So this is the elite that takes the blame for that and gets its title changed to Arbiter, and it ends up being one of the controllable characters within the game. So unlike the first Halo, where you just play as Master Chief, in Halo 2 you play as Master Chief and also as the Arbiter, and it kind of alternates between chapters, which some people liked and some people didn't. But anyway, the storyline plays out where, again, you've got the Gravemind manipulating the Arbiter and Master Chief and Cortana, trying to bring about a series of events that will allow the Gravemind to start infecting other areas, because it's been confined to this Halo ring for ages.
Mm-hmm.
And this is its attempt to try and spread itself, kind of like think of it like a virus. It's trying to spread to a new host, really. And in the process, the Halo ring gets switched on, which switches on all the Halo rings across the entire galaxy. And they discover that the activation for these rings is in another location called the Ark. And here's the kicker. The entrance to the Ark is back on Earth. So that means there's a race to Earth. That's how Halo 2 ends. Now, in 2005...
But that's not the Ark of the Covenant.
No. No, different arc. No Covenant faces melt off at the end of this. In 2005, Bungie then, this is getting back to the Marathon just for a second, releases the full Marathon trilogy for the Mac OS for free online distribution.
Which is a shame, because I paid for the online, for the trilogy.
I was about to say it's a wonderful thing for all the Bungie fans, but well, I'm glad that Chris could turn something nice into something that was a personal affront to his. No, it's the same thing I would have said. In 2006... another interesting development, there was an announcement from a certain fellow named, it says here, Peter Jackson,
I've heard that name before.
He was famous for making that, movie, The Frighteners, with Michael J. Fox, that one. Oh, also those Lord of the Rings movies. So Peter Jackson in 2006 announced that he was going to produce a Halo live action film. And this...
So you can see the Halo. Halo.
Yeah.
Halo.
Yeah. There's a YouTube video where Peter Jackson actually talks about the Halo film. Sadly, this never really made it out of development. It just kind of sat there in various stages of development and never really progressed into actuality. You occasionally still hear rumors that people are kicking around the idea of bringing back this and making a Halo movie. It just hasn't happened. So September 25th, 2007, Halo 3 comes out. Now, in Halo 3, the storyline continues again. Master Chief has to make his way to the Ark. So he has to first go to Earth, because that's where the entrance to the Ark is. So he fights Covenant and Flood forces, and they find a portal in on Earth that leads to a location that's outside of the Milky Way that is the activation point for the Halo defense system.
That's a long way away.
Yeah, it's a long way. Well, you have to be a long way away because if you're using a defense system that's going to kill everything that's sentient within the galaxy, you got to get
outside the galaxy
in order to do it without dying. So they make their way to the Ark. And Master Chief also discovers that a new ring is being constructed to replace the one that he destroyed back in Halo 1. Because you have all these artificially intelligent constructs that still exist, that were built by the Forerunners, that still exist and can still do their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Although most of them are pretty crazy by now because they've had millennia with nothing to do. One of those was Guilty Spark 343. And that 343 becomes important in a little bit. But so you've got this ring being constructed. Master Chief discovers and the Arbiter discovers that if they are to activate the rings before the newest one is finished, it's going to destroy the ring and the Ark. So there's a big battle between them and the Flood and Forerunner technology in order to do this. And of course, eventually they manage to activate it, which makes a self-destruct sequence begin. They try to escape in a ship that goes into slipstream space. The Ark and the ring, blow up and the resultant shockwave through space disrupts the slipstream, pathway and cuts the ship in half. The ship that the Master Chief and Arbiter were both on. The Arbiter is on the front half, which continues to crash into Earth, so the Arbiter actually survives, and everyone assumes Master Chief is dead. Turns out Master Chief is not dead, he's just floating in half a ship out in space and goes into cryogenic sleep again and tells Cortana to wake him up when he's needed. And Cortana sets out a distress beacon, which will probably not be discovered for several years, according to her. So that's that story. And then September 22nd, 2009, 2 years later, Halo 3 ODST comes out. Now, this is the first game where you aren't playing as Master Chief at all. You're playing as a member of the United Nations Space Command Orbital Drop Shock Troopers, or ODST. And the story in ODST takes place sort of between Halos 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Halo 2, you've got that big fight on Earth between humans and the Covenant, when Master Chief then goes off to chase after the escaping Covenant ship. Well, ODST takes place on Earth as a member of this group of shock troopers that are fighting off the Covenant forces that are attacking Earth at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that story. And then in September 14th, 2010, Bungie releases their last Halo game, which is called Halo Reach, and was a prequel. So it takes place in 2552 on Reach, which is that planet I was talking about at the very beginning. When the Pillar of Autumn ship is escaping Reach, mm-hmm. this is the planet that takes place on. And you are you play a Spartan who is designated as Noble Six. He's part of the Noble Strike Squad. It's a six-member squadron. And your job is to do these various missions while trying to fight off the Covenant and ultimately the purpose is to try and get Cortana, the artificially intelligent construct, from Reach onto the Pillar of Autumn so that the information Cortana has can escape the clutches of the Covenant. Because Cortana has information about Forerunner technology, which ultimately becomes this whole Halo program and Ark thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this, again, takes place before the events of Halo Combat Evolved, just before, in fact. And, again, you're not playing as Master Chief. You're playing as a different Spartan. It turns out that Master Chief is one of the few Spartans left by the beginning of Halo Combat Evolved. And it depends on whether or not you've read the movies or read the books or graphic novels, as to whether or not other Spartans are still alive at this point. And then on June 4th, 2011, Microsoft announced Halo 4. Halo 4 was a big deal because Halo 4 is the and I didn't talk about the re-release of Halo Combat Evolved where it had updated the game engine, which mm-hmm. was technically 343 Industries' first foray into developing this without Bungie. But Halo 4 is the first new game with new story by 343 Industries, which is the new production company that's in charge of the Halo franchise. Because Bungie has left. Bungie left Microsoft and left the Halo franchise behind after Halo Reach. That was their last title in that series. And now the company is concentrating on other projects.
Mm-hmm.
So Halo 4 is 343 Industries, baby. And it is going to come out on November 6, 2012. We're recording this in the end of June 2012. It comes out on November 6th, and it's going to pick up about 4 years after the conclusion of Halo 3. It features Master Chief. It features Cortana. And it has a new series of stories that involve the Forerunners.
Mm-hmm.
So this ancient race that developed all this technology that various races are just now really learning more about. You know, they've heard about the Forerunners, but now they're actually starting to learn more about them. And most of it apparently takes place upon an artificial planet that the Forerunners created called Requiem.
Okay.
But that's about all we know. I mean, there's been some video of some of the gameplay that shows some new enemies that you'll run into that are probably Forerunner-based. But that's about all we know. I'm going to get to know about it more after next weekend because I get to play it early.
Yeah. Now, you know, people are familiar with Bungie's take on these things. So I know that Halo 4 is something of maybe a mild question mark. You know, people are wondering if they can, if the series will survive the transition. I think it's probable that it will.
Yeah. For one thing, well, the property is very popular.
Yes.
For another, 343 Industries does have some former Bungie employees on staff. So
yep.
It's not like it's a totally new group of people who have never touched the project before.
Right. But, you know, for those, especially devoted fans who are concerned about something like that. You know, it'll happen with all kinds of properties like that, comic books or movies or, you know, TV series. And the lead writers, I just don't know if I can keep following it. You know,
people
are going to be concerned about that. But I think the series is in good hands.
Yeah, there's series loyalty and then there's company loyalty. And
yep.
Then there's the complicated place in between. It was also interesting when Bungie said that, you know, Halo Reach was their last game in the Halo series. They also released some stats when they gave up all the player information that
mm-hmm.
had been collected over time, because, you know, Bungie was responsible for that for the longest time, and then they transferred that information over because they were no longer the caretakers of the Halo series.
Right.
Let's see if I can read out this number. See, that's a thousand, that's a million. That's, all right, so since September 9th, 2004, this was one of the figures Bungie released when it gave over the information, players had played 20,880,250,123 games of Halo.
That's a few.
Yeah, and then they broke it out by title. And they also said how many minutes had been played in Halo, which was over 123 billion minutes of Halo playing.
Is that broken down by platform too? Or is that just Xbox?
They just played it. They just broke it down by title. So it's not by, as far as I can tell, not by platform. They also broke down you have killed each other 136 billion times and assisted each other 43 billion times, which tells you something about Halo players, I think. they like those Slayer matches.
Yep.
I can't blame them. I like Slayer matches too. The problem with the cooperative matches is you have to work with other people. And unless you're able to select who those people are, that can be a less than ideal situation, as I found out last night when I was playing Halo Reach online. If you guys want to play against me, you know, jump on Halo Reach. I am an easy target, as it turns out. I got involved in the online play for Halo early on when it started. Mm-hmm. But then I started having some real problems with my internet service provider. This was back in the Halo 2 days.
Yeah.
And in fact, I had so many problems that it was starting to seem like I was using a method to cheat when I was playing online. There was a – people discovered that if they used the standby mode on their routers, on their, you know, their modems, that they could cheat in Halo Online. What would happen is you would hit standby, which would make you break your connection to the Microsoft servers,
mm-hmm.
really the Bungie servers, and you'd continue to play. Well, the way Bungie's servers would interpret this is they would just keep having your guy do whatever it was he was doing when you broke the connection. So if you're running in a straight line, you would continue running. But you wouldn't really be there. It would just be a placeholder for you. When the connection would reestablish, assuming it did reestablish in enough time, like it was just a few seconds, your instance of you would suddenly disappear and you would reappear wherever you really were based upon what you were doing locally on your machine.
Right.
So let's say I'm playing a game of Capture the Flag. I pick up the flag. I start running in a straight line. I hit a standby button on my modem. I've broken my connection. I immediately hang a sharp right, run that way several yards, then hang a left and continue running. My pursuers see me continuing to run in a straight line because their connection is still to the servers.
Right.
But every time they try and shoot me or knock me down or run me over, it doesn't seem to work. Nothing's happening. It's because I'm not really there. The servers are just trying to keep track of where I should be. My connection reestablishes. Suddenly the computer has to resolve where I really am versus where it thought I was. The representation of my character disappears. My actual character reappears on the map in a totally different spot than where everyone thought it was because, of course, I had moved in a different location.
Right.
So this was a way of cheating. You know, people did use this. They would grab the flag, they'd use standby, and then they would suddenly be in a different location than where you thought they were, and the flag would get to the other end of the map, and you'd lose. And everyone thought this was awful, and it was, because you were gaming the system. You were finding a hardware solution to solve for the fact that you were not very good in Halo. Well, I had a problem because I had an internet service provider where I was getting severe lag.
Mm-hmm.
And that lag was acting the same way, like little dropped connections. Every now and then my connection would drop. And so it was acting just like this standby bug. And so I ended up I stopped playing because people thought I was cheating. And I didn't want to play that way. That was no fun for me. I wanted to play on a level playing ground. I'm not a great player, but I don't want an unfair advantage.
Right. Yeah.
So I just stopped.
Yeah.
And until recently, I just didn't have a fast enough connection to get back on Xbox Live and really play online again. So for years, I just, that part of the game was off limits to me. I just wouldn't play that. I played the single player campaign and that was it. So I was missing out on a big part of what makes the Halo game so interesting to players.
Right.
Well, I finally got back into it. And now my problem is that there are only certain people who still play Halo Reach online because it's a game that's been out for a while now, right?
Right.
So it's not as popular as it was when it first came out. And the people who are playing online, for the most part, are people who have been playing for a while. So they know all the maps. They know all the tricks. They have developed their playing style. I'm still learning, so I'm eating a lot of shotgun blasts to the face.
Not fun.
No, it's fun for the other players. They love it. They see my name pop up, and they're like, huh, man, I'm going to get a lot of points in this round.
Fresh meat.
Jonathan the Walking Target is playing.
You know, you might want to rename your character. Just saying, that might
clue
them in.
In case you want to know, my game handle, I will go ahead and give it out. I don't mind.
Okay.
Because even if I get tons of requests, that doesn't mean I have to accept them. But my gamer tag is John B. Strickland because I use my name as my handle everywhere. Keeps me accountable. So yeah, if you want to play against me, go ahead. I'm terrible. I'm telling you right now. You don't need to tell me. I already know. All right. So anyway, that's the story of the Halo franchise as it stands right now. We should also say there are lots and lots of books that tie into the Halo franchise that really flesh out the mythology. Depending upon, you know, they may or may not really be canon to the games. It's kind of like the Star Wars stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If it doesn't happen in the games, it's not really canon. But most of them deal with events that happen around the games. Not, they aren't necessarily novelizations of the games themselves. So they really are supplemental material that can flesh out that world if you're really interested in it. If you are interested in a totally different topic and you think that we should talk about it, you should contact us. Our email address is techstuff@discovery.com, or you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is techstuffhsw. Chris and I will talk to you again, probably not about video games, really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.